Okay, so thank you all. So first I'd like to introduce our two panelists who are local. So we have Dave Brecky here from Fair Vote Yukon and Keegan Noonan Boyd from Vote 16. Talk louder?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. And we'll keep it fairly short. We've had a big day of lots of learning already, but I thought it would be helpful. One of the things that we're trying to do with the Citizens Assembly is introduce as many perspectives as possible and make sure that you have a lot of information and opportunities to hear from different people. So I wanted to invite both of these two here tonight to share their perspectives about their organizations and talk a bit about why they do what they do. And so we remember from Tasha's presentation about values, that values really inform beliefs and behavior. And so advocacy is a behavior, and it's driven by really, really strong values. And so both Dave and Keegan are really passionate about what they do, and I wanted them to talk a bit more about kind of how they got involved in their organizations. So that's actually my first question, which I'll pass to Dave first, which is how did you get involved in your organization? When was that? And what was the catalyst for you in becoming involved?
Okay.
You're going to have to talk. Hold it close to your mouth.
Okay.
So that they can hear you.
First of all, I just want to express my good feelings about all of you being here. And it's really nice to have met some of you before. And I have one surprising meet here. I met Ernie Lenny, who we ate with in Old Crow from when he was his first ski camps in 1967, something like that. Anyway, it's just such a pleasure to be here. To begin, I want to share why I am here. Sally and J.P. Pinard, who have worked together with me for years, suggested that I should present my new preferential ridings with second choice vote here to you. And I said that I would very much like to, but I sometimes have problems reaching words. They said that they could help me if I needed a word. As they are not here, I'll do my best to present to you. If I need to, I have a printed response to your questions that I'm already using, I'm sorry to say. But how did I get involved in your organization, and when was that, and what was the catalyst for me? After serving as Yukon's federal returning officer for 10 years following my retirement as an educator, I served on an Elections Canada committee formed to determine distribution of money for proposals to increase voter turnout in 2005. After learning unofficially about how dysfunctional Canada's first past the post system is, in 2005, I sent in my resignation as returning officer for Yukon. My resignation was accepted after validating Yukon's 2006 general election results. Now, I've been working on election system change since my resignation as Yukon's federal returning officer. Now, Fair Vote Canada started in 2000, but before Fair Vote Yukon was established, I co-developed it with a former student in about 2009. Following this, I felt obligated to share my learning, not following this, but that was supposed to be following my learning about how pathetic our electoral system is. I passionately presented my concern to Michael Doherty's political science class, our class, and the catalyst for developing Fair Vote Yukon was a call a couple years later from a former political science class member asking me if I was still working on electoral reform. And she said that if I was, she was very interested in getting involved. And she was the co-founder of Yukon, or Fair Vote Yukon, with me. She was really the one that made it happen. Now, if there is anything specific that you've read or
Why don't you wait for that one?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll let Keegan answer the first question. That's okay. You're just on a roll.
Yeah.
Okay, if you pass the mic to Keegan, we'll let him talk a bit about how he got involved in Vote 16.
Hi, my name is Keegan Nunenboyd, and I am one of the leaders of Vote 16 Yukon, and I also work with the Vote 16 Canada team across the nation. About 2 years ago, I was approached through BITE, an organization many of you may know who works to bring youth together towards solutions. They contacted me right at the end of my time with the Yukon's Youth Panel on Climate Change, and I said, sure. This sounds like a great next step. I've spent the last year trying to look at how youth can be involved in the environment. Why don't we look at a new way that I can sort of develop a project for bringing youth into the Yukon's political system? I had spent a year with the Yukon's Youth Panel on Climate Change, and before that, a couple years organizing some of the Fridays for Future climate strikes that many of you may have seen around town. And the thing that I realized was that these were great initiatives to bring the community together, but at the end of the day, oftentimes we walked away with minimal results because politicians did not have much of a motivation to listen to people under the age of 18, and also had a low motivation to listen to people between the ages of 18 to 24 and even 30 because they vote at very low rates. I saw this as a great opportunity to help them get involved, and I began collaborating with a national team. The catalyst for me getting involved, as I said, was, yeah, we needed to find a way to bring youth into the system. We needed to find out why they weren't voting, and we needed to try and find a system where youth of all interests could have their values represented by the political system in the Yukon and nationally.
Thank you. We'll leave you with the mic to start the next question, if that's okay.
Yeah,
so why is the issue of lowering the voting age so important to you? You talked about that a bit in your first response, but maybe you can elaborate.
Yeah, so I went into that briefly, why lowering the voting age is important. The first reason we talk about is that people can't vote. When they're under 18, people do not have the ability to be represented in Canada. There are questions about whether this is fair, and while it is separate from me, there is currently a court challenge happening in the Supreme Court of Canada on whether limiting the voting age to 18 is fair. I'm not sure whether everyone's aware, but it used to be higher than 18, along with other issues. It used to be only men over 21 who owned property could vote. When we think about that now, we say, well, that's crazy. How could it be only men? How could it be 21? And how could they have to own property? And here we are today with anyone who's over 18. And now we look to whether we can lower that. The other thing we talk about is, obviously, as I said, bringing people into the system, but also the education issue. Fair Vote Canada touched on it earlier, but many people, particularly those under 45, don't even understand the system. Part of that is a lack of education. Most people growing up in my age are getting almost all of their information from the internet, which tends to create pretty extreme biases to both sides of the spectrum. And all they really have is information about what they like and what they think other people like, and very little information about how the system works. And so we're passionate about trying to bring everyone into the system and allowing them to gain a better understanding while they're young, because people who vote younger tend to vote at greater rates when they're older and form more informed opinions.
Thanks, Keegan. And now over to Dave, if you could touch on why the issue of proportional representation in voting systems is so important to you.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. Well, I value being in a community that is inclusive and working together. I do not like it when members are not collaborating. I am confident that most voters have similar feelings. You can think about yourself on that, but I think you probably like it when things are functioning collaboratively. At least I hear it all the time on the news, how collaboration is so important.
And then I'll get into your next question. You can keep the mic. So is there anything specific that you've read or a conversation that you've had that was particularly influential for you on this issue?
Okay. Well, while serving with a representative group of 18 returning officers from across Canada, I was initially shocked just after introductions when one RO stood up, spitting nails angry, and said, "What the hell are we looking at this blankety blank stuff for? Why aren't we looking at our voting system?" And when he first said that, I thought, how can he say such a thing about Canada? It's such a peaceful country. The candidate with the most votes wins the seat. Most seats become government. Where can he be coming from? But before I'd even finish my thought, an Elections Canada official said, "That's a political statement. Can't even be recorded here, let alone discussed." So I didn't earn anything more at those meetings. But I learned in the after meetings. And if I can just go on here. Sorry, am I allowed to get it there? It was in the after meetings that I learned about the mixed member proportional and other systems in which almost all votes are represented. If FPT, your first past the post, in first past the post only votes for elected MLAs are represented. That is why we have false majority governments elected by less than 40% of the vote. Opposition party votes that represent over 60% of the votes have absolutely no voting power in the House with a majority government. They don't matter. The only thing they have is to try to guilt the members or the government. It's just, I just couldn't believe it when I learned about how this stuff works. Anyway, further candidates. Oh yeah, further candidates have been elected with as little as 29% of votes cast. In Canada, if you check, you'll find, or that's where I found it. Now, if those elected MLAs would have been the best choice of other voters, the next term would have been, the last choice, of all the other voters, or most of the other voters. It would have been disastrous for the whole constituency, as well as the MLA. Nobody would have had a good time, I don't think. Okay. However, if the elected MLAs would have been the second choice of the other voters, it probably would have been very positive. You know, people would have worked together so much more effectively. I think you would agree with that. Okay.
We'll go
Thanks.
To it.
Okay. Sorry.
Thanks, Dave. So you've touched on a couple of things that we've referenced today, including voter choice and how voters express their preferences. So for Keegan, is there anything specific that you've read or any conversations that you've had that have been particularly influential for you on the issue of lowering the voting age?
Over the last about week and a half, I've had more conversations on this issue than ever before. Just over a week ago, Wednesday, May 29th, we held the National Summit on Vote 16 in Ottawa. It was amazing. We had an international turnout, a huge list of guests, both from across Canada, experts from countries where they've already lowered the voting age, and we were joined by a large group of a member of parliament and senators. One of the best speeches I heard during the evening show was a member of parliament who went up. He had one of the shortest speeches. A lot of people dragged their speeches on. It sometimes became political. His was short. He went up, he said a few words, and they were that at 16, he gives the keys to his kids. He understands that they can consent to sexual relationships. They can leave the house. And they're also in the hands to decide where they want to go with their futures. They have to pick the classes in school they want to take. They have to focus themselves, depending on where they want to go, on achieving in those classes, and they're preparing themselves for the rest of their life. And if we can give them those abilities to make those decisions, if we give them that responsibility, then why can we not trust them with the responsibility to make informed decisions? A few other short speeches, and just to sort of summarize conversations I've had over the last week and a half even, where numerous people talking about sort of the statistics that show how youth can make informed decisions. Youth are more informed than ever, and youth are more passionate than ever. We're growing up where, I believe in decades past, I wasn't alive for some of them, but it used to not be an issue, right? People used to grow up, and at 16, 17, 18, 20, they weren't worried about what was going on in the world. But now youth are. They're seeing things like climate change. They're seeing an affordability crisis, many other issues, wars, and they're ready to cast their vote and to say, hey, I'm tired of being raised into a world where others are sort of, in many cases, making decisions that are making the world harder than ever to grow up into. Youth are leaving the house knowing that they may never be able to afford their own house, or that in 50 years the climate may be falling apart. Just a couple examples. Thank you.
Thank you, Keegan. So maybe with that, I will move to questions from members for our two panelists, and the two of you can kind of share the mic back and forth as need be. Any questions from the room?
I got a question.
Okay, Kevin.
I was going to take mine off, but that works. Okay.
Question for Keegan. Have you seen any of the things you were proposing, the things you were discussing, telling us about, have you seen anything in action like that getting started anywhere in Canada? What kind of success has that, have you seen anything like that?
There has been some success. Right at home, the Whitehorse City Council, just over a month ago, voted in favor of asking the Yukon government to consider lowering the voting age and to look at the issue. In the Yukon, we have a system just like everywhere else in the country where the Municipalities Act governs whether a municipality can lower the voting age, and so they have to wait for territorial approval. And when that idea went to the annual general meeting of the Yukon Association of Communities, that's every elected official from every community in Yukon attends that. That was in Dawson recently. We did not see it pass, but we saw over 30% of supporters for that. And so when we think about that, that's a lot, right? Over a third of people believe in the Yukon, over a third of elected officials believe that we should consider lowering the voting age.
Okay, thanks. Any further questions from the room? Oh, I see Dave. I'll make my way there.
I have a question for Keegan. I've had some conversations within my circle, and we talk to sometimes young people, and usually we see a trend that the younger population says, oh, I'm not interested in politics. And as you grow older, you're sort of getting into more and more. Do you have any insights on why that trend is? And how do you see bringing youth into the conversations around politics?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing is that youth are starting to become more involved. We're seeing a trend of youth who are super involved in issues, people who are extremely passionate, getting involved in different initiatives. And we're also seeing a general trend with everyone having such great access to the internet, being able to see constant news on political issues. The youth are becoming more involved. That's what the research across the nation shows, and in Canada. And I believe it's fair to say that in the Yukon, people are on the same sides of things. As for how can we bring youth into it, I think the most direct way is to tell the government as a society that we want them to look at lowering the voting age. Even if it doesn't necessarily happen immediately, we want them to bring youth into the discussion. And the most direct way, of course, is to lower the voting age and to bring education and proper civics education to the youth.
Okay, Okay, thanks for that. We have another question from Michael.
Why 16? Like, if you get a learner's permit to drive at 15, then why not be able to vote? That's responsibility there. Why not 14? My kids got jobs at 14 and start filing their taxes at 14. Like, why 16?
When we talk about 16, obviously it's a difficult age. A lot of people think it's slightly arbitrary. On the science side of things, at 16, youth are most prepared to make an informed decision. At 16, we're highly, and most people would say, the psychologist, their research shows that at 16, cold cognition is fully developed. That's when we're talking about long-term issues and making an informed long-term decision. It's not the same with short-term issues. At 16, 17, we aren't as well adapted at making immediate decisions. As for the 15 part, obviously driving would be an example where we say youth are allowed to drive, but they're being guided by their parents at 15. They would have to wait to 16 to drive on their own. And we believe that 16 is sort of, it's a good step. Me personally, I believe that 16 is the place to go. Most people who are looking at the issue say that 16, once we start getting lower, we do start to get into other issues of youth being more biased, oftentimes not venturing outside of a close friend group or their parents. Perhaps in 2 decades, people will look at 16 and say, we want to lower it to 14, but right now the world is looking at 16.
Okay, thanks for that. Oh, Brent has a question.
Hi, Keegan. I have a two-part question. The first one is, do you think that the internet is a good place for people to be getting their information to make these kind of decisions? And do you think the education should happen maybe before the age gets lowered so that they coincide with each other?
Yeah, I think that the education should come first, but I suppose I could get back to that. The first part of the question on the internet, no, I think that most people who are looking at these sort of things would say the internet is, in some ways, almost a terrible place to get the information. It turns people very radical in both directions on most issues and sort of creates a bit of a melting pot where people hear the same thing that they believe in over and over again. That's why we're pushing for better education in schools. As someone who just finished high school, I can say that it is pretty lacking. We learn a lot about Canadian history, but unfortunately, we don't learn enough about how we can make better decisions in the future. Sometimes learning about our mistakes in our country of the past isn't enough to avoid mistakes and make better decisions in the future. And I believe that, yeah, education should happen in most schools across the country. We often do mock elections anytime there is a major election. It's a common practice, but unfortunately that's every 4 years. And I don't believe we need to put in a full 5 years of education before we lower it. I think that once it's put into action, there will be a period of time. Obviously, some people may turn 16 and immediately be able to vote, but most people aren't voting at 16 anyway. Perhaps their birthday is at a later time and they would be voting after school based on the election cycle, and this would enable the vast majority of people to get greater civics education.
A question from Jean.
I have a question for both of you or whoever can answer. So looking at this from our perspective, we're spending our energy on comparing electoral systems. So is there any evidence that some electoral systems encourage more youth vote, or that youth participate more in voting under some electoral systems versus others? Do we know anything about that?
I'll keep my answer short to that, and then I'll pass the microphone. I'm not aware of a lot of research. For me, at least, and a lot of our sort of Canadian campaign, we focus on looking at other similar nations where we're seeing changes like this. looking at the United Kingdom, where many parts are lowering it to 16, and we're possibly looking at more in their upcoming election. Also to nations such as Germany and Austria, who have lowered the voting age. We tend to concentrate on those to give Canadians a perspective that if similar nations can lower the voting age, that we can follow with them.
Thanks. Thank you. I'm not much into research at all, but I did talk with a lot of people since 2006, an awful lot of people. And one suggestion that came forward to me about the voting age being lowered is that at 16, students would start to get engaged with democracy and with voting, with how the whole system works. If they get to vote at 16, I think that it would really encourage engagement of them especially, and probably when they get engaged, they'll even encourage engagement from their parents. And I think what we want in democracy is engagement.
Okay, we have one last question from Asmi, unless anyone else is like really dying to ask one more question. I'll give Asmi the last word.
I think it's a good idea to vote at 16. But my question, I think you should promote the 16 having more responsibility and choices. It doesn't make sense to me at 16 you can vote for government, but you have to get permission from your parents to go on a school trip. You can't open bank account. You know, there are so many things you don't have right to do. So you have to develop all the rights, not only the voting.
Yeah, I can see that sort of idea. I guess one way we would look at that is that could fall under the category of accountability from governments. When 16-year-olds can vote, they would have the ability to vote, perhaps on issues that concern them. What I would say is that, I mean, we don't go too much into contracts and stuff like that. That's sort of beyond our scope. But in some cases, voting may be perhaps less risky than allowing a student or someone who's 16 or 17 to sign away their life. At the end of the day, when we talk about voting, there's at 16, 17, there's almost nothing to lose and only gain in terms of mm-hmm. electoral representation, as opposed to signing contracts at 16 and 17. There often is the risk of loss.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you to Keegan and Dave for joining us. Let's give them a round of applause before I keep going. Thank you. And I'd also like to thank all of the members for their engagement. This is a big day. We did a lot today. It's been very warm in here, so I really appreciate the engagement and the excellent, thoughtful questions and the discussion in the small groups. So well done. Also, thank you to Tony's Pasta House for the delicious dinner. I hope people are not still hungry, and if you are, please grab some.